some ways. My daughter says there's a difference between mess and weed. The straight ones are based on mess and the hippies are based on weed, which is kind of like overgeneralization, but I like it.
Guillermo Mash here, host of the Without a Roof radio program, which kicks off a trifecta of KZFR Wednesday public affairs programming, airing from 5 to 5:30.
Each week we explore poverty, the worst form of violence, focusing on human beings without a roof. Thanks for listening, and if you have a roof, be grateful. Non-Human Radio, hosted by Jeannie Pizzino, talks all things animal rights, bringing you the latest news and interviews with local activists.
Plus book, film, and restaurant reviews and deep discussions of the benefits of veganism.
For humans and non-humans alike, Wednesdays from 5:30 till 6 p.m. The Real Issue, hosted by Sue Hildebrand, digs into topics ranging from elections to environmental protection.
From social justice to economic justice, from the local to the global.
We cover the political part of everything. Wednesdays from 6 to 7 p.m. Thanks for listening to
Peak Power Radio.
Wanted to just kind of lay out.
And this is FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Revolution starts right now. You're listening to The Real Issue on KZFR Radio. This is Sue Hildebrand, and The Real Issue is a public affairs talk show. We are here every Wednesday night from 6 until 7 p.m. And, of course, we can be heard live through the internet at kzfr.org. You can also download the app from the website. You can also listen to the archives from the website. This edition of The Real Issue is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Mount Shasta Spring Water Company, serving the community for over two decades with natural spring water bottled at a private certified spring at the base of Mount Shasta. Mount Shasta Spring Water is available for home and office delivery by calling 800-922-6227. Last night, holy moly, I have the wrong script. Holy cow, how did that happen? So last night, as you are simply wading through all of the news of last night's primaries here in California, in Montana, in New Jersey, in Iowa, we are here to talk about what happened last night here in California, yesterday here in California, and what this might mean to the future. So I want to bring in Mike Hawkins here. Actually, what I'd really like to do is take a quick break, and we're going to be right back. You're listening to The Real Issue on KZFR. We are back. I feel like I've pulled it together. Live community radio. Gotta love it. Gotta love it. All right. I brought Mike Hawkins back here in the studio tonight to talk about what happened yesterday in California primary in particular, and how we take that information and to start thinking about what this means for the general election. Is there really going to be this blue wave as many folks predict? Or are we just living in our own media bubble, listening to our own echo chamber? So Mike Hawkins is back here in the studio. Mike Hawkins is a long time local political activist and an analyst. So Mike Hawkins, thanks again for coming back into the studio to think about what happened yesterday and how we move into the future.
Okay, in California, the blue wave continues. For Democrats, the real concern was that of the seven congressional districts that are now in Republican hands, but Hillary Clinton won those congressional districts, we Democrats were concerned that we were going to have too many Democratic candidates and too few Republican candidates in each district. Therefore, the top two finishers, as we have in California, it's top two regardless of party, go on to November, and they would be Republicans. Even though we might have six or eight or ten Democratic candidates, we would end up with two Republicans going to November because they got the most votes. That did not happen. We were really afraid of it. Our Republican friends can rejoice, if one can say this to them, that they have a candidate who is going to run for governor as the Republican candidate in November versus Lieutenant Governor Gavin Newsom There was some concern with them that they would have two Democrats, the other being a former mayor of Los Angeles, Antonio Villaraigosa. Well, it didn't happen that way, and the Republican candidate, which was Donald Trump's candidate, he did well enough to be second.
Mike Hawkins, I really want to get into all of that. I do want to start, though, with the local elections, because my what I think is that if we don't take very seriously our effect on local elections, we can't get people out to the polls ever. Mike Hawkins, I want to start with District 2 for Butte County Board of Supervisors, District 2. Deborah Lucero, who was on this program a few weeks ago, she won by a sizable amount. She defeated incumbent Larry Wall with about 55% of the vote. And this could have gone either way, as Larry Wall's supporters and his targeted demographics, as you talked about last week, are older folks, and they are more reliable voters in general, and they're more reliable voters particularly in the primaries. And so Deborah Lucero had a lot working against her. And because of the rules, she is the winner and will become a county supervisor next year. What happened? How did Deborah Lucero beat the odds?
Much of the problem here for Larry Wall was he put too many eggs in the same basket. If you saw his television ads, which Americans watch television a lot, you would see the ads are continual, what we call testimonials. A person who is a constituent will stand up and say, wonderful person that Supervisor Wall or whoever it is that they're huckstering at the time, what a wonderful person they are, and not say very much about it. Larry's theme was to stick to stay the same as we are, wanted to talk about public safety, wanted to talk about public service, and all of his TV commercials featured people who will never see a 60th birthday again. Now, that's a lot of voters. It's a lot of serious, consistent percentage of voters, but it ain't everybody, and apparently he didn't get the job done.
But Mike Hawkins, really, let's go even deeper than that. He was an incumbent.
Yes.
I'm sure I don't know this for a fact, but I think he raised more money, or at least he had more money to spend. It's a primary, which a lot of folks that might have voted for someone of Deborah's persuasion were out of town. They're Democrats, and they generally don't vote.
All of that's true, but look, in this case, logic didn't reach a proper conclusion. Larry Wall was defeated, in part because Deborah Lucero's candidacy was more active. You would see the yard signs. Her people walked door to door. Her husband, a gentleman named Ray Lager, walked 2,500 doors himself. You're impressed when somebody comes to the door with a smile and a shoe shine and said, support my candidate here. And Mr. Wall didn't do that, and eventually time ran out on him.
And I want to circle back on that in terms of much later on, I want to ask you, so what does this mean moving into the general election? And so I want to hang on to that, what you just said. I do want to move into another race, another surprising local victory, and I think surprising even to the winner in Butte County, Supervisor District 3. This was a three-way race, and so reaching that 50% plus one mark to not have to face a general election was considered unlikely. I mean, you and I even spoke about this last week saying, yeah, that would be interesting, but it's unlikely. But Tammy Ritter did that. Tammy Ritter received over 53% of the vote, with Bob Evans and Norm Rosine splitting the rest. Bob Evans got about twice as many as Norm Rosine, and Tammy got about twice as many as Bob Evans. So what happened there? Everybody that I spoke with, the experts, as you like to deny yourself, I even spoke with the experts, and a lot of folks said, no, it's really unlikely that anybody's going to win in the primary for a three-way race.
Well, Tammy Ritter ran a very active campaign. Door-to-door work. This last weekend, she had a couple of dozen people rattling doors, including myself. She raised sufficient money. She had a forest of yard signs. She's personable and engaging, and you can see her on the stump. You know that she has knowledge of the issues. She's a very smart person. Two master's degrees. She has experience being a member of the Chico City Council. So when Tammy can say things in such a way that you understand that she's done her homework. And the other opponents, although had some of these kind of attributes, they just seemed lower energy, less willing to get out and rattle doors as Tammy is willing to do so. And Tammy's people were enthusiastic.
Mike Hawkins, you described both Butte County Board of Supervisor District 2 and 3, the winning campaigns. You used the word active.
Yes.
Which I think is very interesting because last week you mentioned that a strategy for incumbents is to kind of keep things on the down low because incumbents just have they tend to, I think the number is 90 or 95% of incumbents win re-election, and so their strategy is to not make it too active and not make it too interesting and not, you know, not generate too much press. And so what is it about this year that worked for these two campaigns?
Both Deborah Lucero and Tammy Ritter created excitement within the activist kind of community. They both raised enough money for this. And the three conservative candidates, the three Republican candidates, two in Tammy Ritter's race, one meaning Larry Wall in his district, were older gentlemen, had just didn't have the fire to get out and have people rattle your door and knock on your door. You didn't see their yard signs up in nearly the abundance that you did with both Tammy Ritter and with Deborah Lucero. They did have television advertisement, but the television advertisement was basically like Mr. Wall's. It was very simple, directed towards older people. Mr. Wall and Mr. Evans are both career military. They were Air Force pilots. And you see these pictures of themselves like 40 years ago when they were young men. And, you know, that appeals to certain kinds of people, but it doesn't cover the whole electorate like you want to have.
Mm-hmm.
And they were big on public safety, saying the same things, but they're not engaging, interesting sort of people. Mr. Evans has ran for a supervisor before and defeated. He ran for city council before and defeated. He was appointed briefly to the city council and then ran to hold on to the seat to which he was appointed and lost. He's not a very energetic, effective sort of candidate. And both Deborah and Tammy are energetic people.
Do you think that it's the timing as well? I think I want to circle back to President Trump a few times throughout this hour. So much of, you know, the political energy, you know, we talk about the Me Too movement, so much of that is in response to the comment and the behavior of mm-hmm. President Trump, you know, before and as well as while he's been in office. And there's been so much backlash. Do you think it's also a contribution of the energy, the mobilization, the pushback that has helped? Was it also good timing for these candidates? Women, energetic?
Oh, I think that's part of it. But you have to take your race in terms of the time that you're running for public office. A difficult time for Republicans because of the unpopularity of President Trump. But remember, we're running in Chico. We're not running statewide. I would think that since Trump's name didn't come up very much during the supervisor elections, it's a factor, and maybe it has a motivating factor. It's a Democratic turnout across the country as well as across the state yesterday is substantially higher than you would normally find in an off-year primary election. So this is a factor, but, you know, these things are often complicated.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Absolutely. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Real Issue on KZFR Radio. I have Mike Hawkins in the studio again, who is he refuses to take on the label expert, but he's pretty good at understanding the numbers. He's a good political strategist, so I dragged him in here one more week kicking and screaming. If you have a question about the elections, what maybe it means moving forward into the general elections, you can send an email to sue@kzfr.org, and I will pose the question as soon as I get them to Mike Hawkins. Mike, it is. It's very complicated. It's very complicated. A lot of different factors going in, and as I was listening to you talking about how President Trump was not mentioned in these local elections, but you have been studying the numbers and looking at races for over the long term. And so when you gave that answer about they haven't talked about President Trump in this campaign, I thought, I think it's too, I think you're answering in such a small, in a laser-focused way. And I guess what I'm asking you is, in the context of historical trends, does it seem like this is really and truly a moment? Because what I'm eventually going to ask you is there really this blue wave that the Democrats are preparing for?
Thus far this year, there has been a blue wave. Whether it continues or not, we're yet to see. But yesterday was no exception. And across California, it was no exception. But at something of the local level, the presidency is really not much of an issue. If you're running for the U.S. Senate, or you're running for Congress, or you're running for governor of the state, then it becomes an issue because they interact more directly with whoever is president. When you're running for city council, school board, supervisor, then it's a different story.
But, you gotta at least give me this, is that we have seen more people, and particularly more women, mobilized and engaging in the political process in response, I think, in some pretty fundamental ways, to President Trump. And so I'm just curious, will you even give me that, just that this is a moment where... Okay, good.
I don't know how much that the tone of the times in the presidency in the national aura, I don't know how much that affects local races, but it probably affects turnout to some extent. I don't know how to quantify it.
Okay.
I'm making reference to women as candidates this year. The Democratic Party has been women's party since 1980. That was the first year that we detected a gender gap. Since then, it's basically expanded. And this is touted as another year of the woman. It's not the year of the woman. It's the year of the Democrat woman. There are women running across the country in much bigger numbers, and the vast majority of them are women.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Real Issue on KZFR Radio. Mike Hawkins, another less surprising but still interesting result from yesterday's primary election here in California is the California District 1, Congressional District 1. There were seven candidates, including the Republican incumbent, Doug LaMalfa. And predictably, LaMalfa was the highest vote getter. Oh, I do have another. Well, I was going to go back to Deborah Lucero, but let's let that one go. Sorry. Doug LaMalfa was the highest vote getter. And the question was really about who would come in second and advance to the general election in November. But based on the fundraising numbers, it would make sense that Jessica Holcomb would come in second because she, not quite 2-1, but she outspent Audrey Denny by about outraised about $100,000 to Audrey Denny's fundraising efforts. So having been out, you know, been beaten in the fundraising aspects, Audrey Denny still came in second, and she received about 6,000 more votes. So she'll advance to the general election. What did Audrey Denny do that was right?
Okay. It is true that Jessica Holcomb raised much more money. She raised, the last reporting period, 123,000 more than did Audrey Denny. 278,000 to 155,000, but It's not what you raise. It's how effective you use the money that you have. With Audrey Denny's situation, if you're in the media market that is the Sacramento Valley, which is the bulk of this congressional district, her TV ads were on continually. Her ads were good. They're engaging. She's a good. She has a good aura. She's a pleasant sort of person to listen to. Jessica Holtzman had zero television ads. Neither one just flooded the mailbox with targeted bulk mail. And what targeted bulk mail that Jessica Holcomb had, I looked at it and I thought, who designs this stuff? It looks so cluttered. So often candidates want to talk extensively in bulk mail. And watch people at the post office when they get bulk mail. They stand over the trash can and pitch it in as if they were throwing horseshoes. So you don't want to clutter bulk mail like that, and she didn't do a very good job at that. With Jessica Holcomb, now she's a Chicoan, so you would see her here a lot, so that you got to understand that too. But I see the other congressional candidates here as well, and I would not see Jessica Holcomb. About 3 months ago, I talked to Jessica briefly, and I said I was very impressed with all the money she's raised, because that's quite a bit for a congressional candidacy at this point. Mm-hmm. And but after that, you didn't see any energy from her. You've got to have energy as a candidate, because people have lives and they've got other things to do than listen to your position on budget matters. Audrey put on a real good show, and Jessica sadly did not. I don't know where she spent that money. Mm-hmm. And the real money, these things are going to bulk mail and they go into television ads. And Audrey set up campaign offices. She was very energetic, engaging personality. At 3 months ago, I would have thought Jessica would win this.
Mm-hmm. And I was looking at the numbers the other day, and it seemed like, based on the numbers I was looking at, that Jessica Holcomb still had quite a bit of money on hand. So I know you can't read her mind, but I'm wondering if that was a strategy, sort of assuming she would advance to the general.
I don't know what else one would assume, other than she assumed that she would make it to the November election and then would shoot all her guns off then.
Right.
I haven't talked to her about it, and I don't intend to. But I don't know what else she would assume, because she didn't put up very much energy in this election to justify getting on the ballot for November. Remember, top two go.
Right.
It's not which Democrat and which Republican. It's which candidates, the top two. And for whatever reason, it didn't happen for her.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Real Issue on KZFR Radio. I have Mike Hawkins in the studio, who is a political activist, analyst, expert, whatever. He's really good with the numbers, the demographics. If you have a question for Mike Hawkins, send me an email, sue@kzfr.org. Mike Hawkins, I was looking at the numbers today, and I just want to get confirmation that my logic is sound, or you can tell me that I am just making up stuff. And either one is absolutely fine with me. But, Congressman LaMalfa is the incumbent in a Republican district. I mean, it's reliably Republican. In the raw numbers, LaMalfa received 17,000 votes, and the other next Republican candidate received 1,600. So we can kind of throw that in if we feel like it. So if we added up the votes for the top three, the next three, so we had LaMalfa, and then we had three Democrats in positions 2, 3, and 4. If we added up those votes, then we get just over 17,000 votes cast for Democrats. So I'm wondering, taking in the fact that Republicans tend to vote in higher numbers during primaries, so the fact that Doug LaMalfa received around the same number of votes as the next three candidates that are all Democrats combined, do you think that Congressman LaMalfa should be a little bit concerned about the general election?
Well, you should always be a little bit concerned, but he has $400,000, and he's been through this many times. His last election, he won by 53,000 in this congressional district. Now, the numbers, the way you describe them, they give hope to those of us who are hopeful Democrats, of which certainly I'm one of them. But the history of this district is would tend to favor the Republican. But we have an unusual kind of candidate this time. And it's a time where Mr. LaMalfa's party isn't particularly favorable. But remember, it's this congressional district. Once you clear Chico, it looks like rural America everywhere, mm-hmm. in a political sense. I mean,
yeah. And so you described Audrey Denny as an unusual candidate. Why?
Her youth. There's a woman who is, I believe, 34. She's tall and slender and engaging. It's different than our normal kind of candidates are people who are white men who are the other side of the middle age and kind of full of a lot of data and information, not engaging sort of people. She's different. And look at her standing on a podium with Congressman LaMalfa, who is 280 pounds and about 6 feet five and a grumpy sort of old guy. The contrast between their personas makes this more interesting. But I'm not suggesting that you should apply for a job in Audrey Denny's congressional office. I'm not suggesting that just yet. But you know, it's a curveball to what LaMalfa tends to deal with.
And as I was imagining these two candidates and thinking about this district and thinking about the fact that most of the district is very rural. Mm-hmm. It's not Chico.
Yes.
And so as I was imagining these candidates on the road, how would a you know, quote, regular voter. I know there's no such thing as a regular voter, but how would a voter in District 1 perceive this young female versus this reliable farmer?
I think for Audrey, the fact that she's a farm kid, and she's promoted that in all of her television ads, which every voter in the first congressional district has seen. So I think she should promote that sort of thing. Personal, engaging. She comes across, her persona is so different than Mr. LaMalfa's. This is, as I said, this is the Democrats throwing a curveball at somebody mm-hmm. who's not used to hitting this kind of pitch. So, you know, we'll see. But, you know, she can talk the farm world as Mr. LaMalfa has. They're both farm kids.
It's going to be an interesting race.
Aren't
it's going
they
to be
always?
Pretty. Yes, it's true. Some are more interesting than others. It's an interesting mm-hmm. year. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Real Issue on KZFR Radio. If you have a question for Mike Hawkins here in the studio with me, send me an email at sue@kzfr.org. Mike Hawkins, let's continue with. Here's a question that I wanted to ask you about before we move away from California District 1. The News and Review endorsed Jessica Holcomb, saying, quote, "We think she has the best shot at unseating the incumbent Doug LaMalfa." So what are the obstacles? What do you think Audrey Denny's obstacles are going to be moving in?
The shape of the district. The district leans towards Republicans. That's the first start. You know, if you're a Republican, you don't expect to win in downtown Oakland. If you're a Democrat, you have a hard time winning here. That would be the first place to start. I would hope that Audrey, being a different sort of candidate than usual, would get attention. She spent an awful lot of money on, and I just stress, these TV ads that they just saturated the part of this congressional district that is in this media market. So she's a familiar kind of person like that. I think she should keep her comments real, real simple, not a lot of detail. Her persona is so much more pleasant than is Mr. LaMalfa that I think that contrast would appeal to a lot of people, particularly younger people. If you're a voter under 40, and that's what younger voter is, under 40, she's one of you. If you're an older woman, she has appeal to you. because she said if she comes across like she's a very serious sort of person, if she comes across just too young for a 60-year-old voter, then she's got problems.
Yeah.
But she can sell her if she sells herself in such a way that she's the girl wonder.
Yeah.
Gives her a leg up. But one shouldn't kid themselves. This is an uphill fight.
It's an uphill fight.
But every election, lightning strikes.
Yeah. And it seems that, Congressman LaMalfa has really tied himself to President Trump.
Yes.
And we have a long way to go until the general, although it seems short, it's sort of a long way to go in terms of anything could happen. And I would be a little nervous, to be honest, if I were a Republican, because the president has a lot of time to really annoy more and more and more people. He's, you know, and what I mean by that is these tariffs on Mexico and the backlash. And I was just reading this morning that there are targeted tariffs that are being imposed by the Mexican government on, for example, pork, which will target voters in Iowa and New Jersey or Pennsylvania. And so I wonder if it's in the end may hurt Congressman LaMalfa.
The Mexican government has targeted in their tariffs places that motivate Republicans
right.
not to do so.
Exactly.
So they haven't targeted, like this congressional district, the primary products are rice, almonds, walnuts, soft fruits, kiwis, oranges, some lumber. The Mexicans haven't targeted that. And they have targeted, whiskeys, which would affect Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
Well, who in Kentucky needs a message? It's the majority leader, Mr. McCall.
Right.
Okay, so it's, you know, they're being strategic
it's
with this.
It's fascinating to see the reaction.
Well,
yeah.
they're no dummies. They
exactly.
know what they're doing. In addition, remember what a big customer the U.S. and Mexico are of each other.
Right, exactly. Mike Hawkins, I have a message here from Dan who writes, ask about the prospects of other less traditional candidates. Should people of color run here, for example, how would that person beat LaMalfa? Or all it says is, how would he beat LaMalfa? And I'm not sure if it means, how would you, Mike Hawkins, beat LaMalfa? Or how would this even less traditional candidate do it? And then what about social media?
Well, I would assume the person of color would have a hard time winning here, but it does happen. But you have to stand out in such a way as a kind of person you are. Think of Jesse Jackson versus Barack Obama.
Mm-hmm.
Barack Obama didn't run as a black man. He ran as a uniter. One America, not a red America, not a blue America. There's the United States of America. You wouldn't hear Jesse Jackson
right.
say that.
Right.
And inclusive. If you're of a ethnicity that doesn't fit your district, you have to sound inclusive. And so it's tough road to hoe.
Yeah.
If we're speaking of social media, it's an up-and-coming way to communicate with people, and it's inexpensive. But it does communicate with just certain sorts of people and probably a population that has a lower propensity to turn out.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty interesting. Pretty interesting, all of these factors. Mike Hawkins, I want to sort of take a bigger perspective, move a little bit away from the local stuff, but still, of course, talk about how we move into the general election. There were the big surprises here in Northern California. But last week, I want to follow up with some of the things that we talked about last week. In the South, we talked a bit about congressional districts 48 and 49.
Yes.
And the results were interesting for different reasons. In District 48, there were 15 challengers to the incumbent Republican, Dana Rohrabacher. And Rohrabacher was first sworn into Congress in 1989, so almost 30 years ago. So, Mike Hawkins, what seems interesting to me is that this 30-year incumbent only received about 30% of the votes. What does this say about the district, and maybe even what does this say about this blue wave come general election time?
Dana Rohrabacher is not your typical Republican.
Uh-huh.
He's, I think his colleagues call him the the congressman from Russia or some such thing.
I've
He's very tied to relationship with the Russians. And I think his personality rubs people wrong, and he's been around a long time. So, and, you know, demographics in California work against Republicans. There were two Democrats who are presently fighting it out. We don't have all the complete numbers in yet to be his challenger. Do I have that? Am I correct with that?
Earlier today, that's what I read. I don't know who's in there yet.
Well, it suggests to me that because he got fewer votes than the two of them together, although the fourth person was another Republican, could be a competitive district, and Democrats have been targeting that district as long as six others in the state.
Right. Yeah, that was a crazy one. I'm going to keep watching that one. The other one, again, the other interesting one that we talked about last week, District 49, is an open seat because Republican Daryl Issa is not seeking re-election, and he was in that seat, or he has served in Congress for the last 18 years. There were 16 candidates for this open seat, and the top vote-getter being a Republican, but receiving only 25% of the votes. The next three finishers were Democrats, and I want you, Mike Hawkins, to talk about this race in general and how we understand these numbers. What does it mean for the general election? And this is what is so interesting to me, as well as all other people watching politics, is these two districts, although they have been served by Republicans for a long time, both of them voted for Hillary Clinton 2 years ago. So what does this mean? What do you predict? I know you shouldn't predict. What do you predict for the general election for these districts?
Mr. Issa's district, District 49, which is kind of the northern part of San Diego County and a pinch of Orange County, it's been moving towards Democrats for some time. Daryl Issa was nearly beaten 2 years ago. And so he's decided to spend more time with his family, as we say in our business. And so that district is probably the most red meat for Democrats of the seven Republican districts in California that we're targeting. That one, any Democrat was probably going to be the favorite. It's changing demographics is the case. The Republicans in California at the congressional level get into office and they stay politically the same. And while the state has changed, they haven't.
Right.
And both ideologically and socially, and they don't learn to speak Spanish if they don't speak Spanish already. And eventually those things will catch up with a certain number of people. So the Roybacher district and the Issa districts are two real hot ticket items. But there are five others.
Mike Hawkins, I have this question that I can't quite put into words yet, and it's starting to form. But one of the things that you seem to continue to deny is that there is some kind of categorically different energy, this blue wave that it's being called, and every time I say, hey, isn't this true, isn't this a moment, isn't this, you know, an interesting moment that we need to pay attention to, and you keep giving me rational, totally believable mm-hmm. reasons that I think shows that it's not necessarily something so unique. So, for example, you said, well, you know, ISIS district was turning more Democratic anyway, and so it's not necessarily this blue wave. But I'm wondering, you know, as we know, in a midterm election, the president's party almost always reliably loses seats. So if we compare this midterm with, let's say, the midterm of 2014 or the midterm of 2010 and so on, is this typical?
Well, we really don't know yet. The anger is at a fairly high level right now. That's true. But Mr. Obama's first midterm election after being elected, Democrats lost 61 seats. So, you know, that's a pretty big wave. That was really a red wave. I don't know what's going to happen this time, but I've been around this quite some time, so I'm a little more cautious of predicting extremes.
All right.
But as a practical matter, if I'm a Republican, I'm concerned if I'm in a district that my party has been losing ground in, or someplace where the Democrats are targeting, such as 7 congressional districts in Southern California that Hillary Clinton won just a year and a half ago. This is every year something crazy happens. To making your point, it's the first year after a presidential election, a new presidential election. Just as you said, that's normally bad news for the party of the incumbent president. There's a lot of anger out there. The Democrats are coming up with a lot of interesting candidates, more female candidates, and that tends to bring in more volunteers that normally wouldn't show up. And that's crucial to things. But I'm just a little more cautious to think that we're going to turn water into wine. There are years where that does happen. Franklin Roosevelt's early presidency was that way. Lyndon Johnson's 1964, after he assumed the presidency the previous year, was gangbusters, and then the next year he lost his shirt. So, you know, things have their ups and downs, but I sound more cautious than I am enthusiastic. I'm enthusiastic, but I'm also cautious. And it depends on where you are. The trick is to win in marginal places.
Huh, okay.
Yeah, it's not the sweet Wyoming.
Sure. And you know, as I was listening to you, I started to, my first thought was, there are 7 Republican congressional districts that are being targeted by the Democrats. And I thought, boy, how come District 1, California District, Congressional District 1, LaMalfa's district, isn't being targeted? And that's simply because it's very reliably Republican. There's not a lot, we're not at the margin. We are a red district.
If Hillary Clinton had won District 1 a year and a half ago, our conversation would be different.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just a matter of resources. I mean, everybody has unlimited desires and limited resources.
Right. And speaking of resources, I got an email again that says, Mike thinks that money is all that matters, but doesn't Audrey Denny's victory suggest otherwise?
The person has overstated my position on money. I'm a big believer that the better funded candidate tends to do better, but an unfunded candidate goes no place.
Mike Hawkins, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Real Issue on KZFR Radio. Mike Hawkins is in the studio with me. Mike Hawkins, I do want to finally, well, let's turn to the governor's race. And, you know, not surprisingly, the state lieutenant governor, Gavin Newsom, was the top vote getter. And the uncertainty that we talked about last week was who would come in number 2 and advance towards the general election. As it turns out, the Republican John Cox, the newcomer, never been in politics before, John Cox took 2nd place, and he was endorsed by President Trump. And I read a lot today. I was online a lot today. In Gavin Newsom's acceptance speech last night, he talked about California being, quote, a state where we don't criminalize diversity but celebrate it, a state where we don't obstruct justice but demand it, a state where we don't regulate a woman's body more than we regulate assault weapons on the street, end quote. And then Newsom called on President Trump to come often to California to campaign for Republican John Cox. And it seems that Newsom's strategy is to leverage the president's unpopularity here in the state. On the other hand, Mike, I want to ask you to address, this seems like this could be a strategy that negatively affects down ballot races, that what we talked about last week, that it could mobilize more Republicans to come out to vote for a Republic gubernatorial candidate. And while they're at the polls, they'll vote for their Congress member, and they'll vote for their county supervisor, and they'll vote for the city council. And
I think the other way.
Why am I always wrong here?
Well, you could be right, and maybe I could be wrong. What you just quoted from the lieutenant governor, this is playbook rhetoric from a person who was the mayor of San Francisco.
Right. Exactly. Now,
this is not how people talk in Omaha.
Sure.
Okay. So what he's trying to do is paint John Cox into a corner as this sort of peculiar guy. The truth is John Cox has run for public office many times, sometimes it's a Democrat. He's run 7 times, I believe, in over his lifetime. And Mr. Newsom is trying to tie Cox to President Trump. Why President Trump? President Trump lost California a year and a half ago by 3.9 million votes. That's pretty incredible. So, and this idea of Mr. Newsom inviting the president to come, I think he said, please come vote.
He said, come often.
nobody takes this serious like he really meant that. It's his way of tying John Cox to Donald Trump. And Donald Trump is a skunk at the picnic in this state. And that's what he's doing. Yeah. What effect will it have down ballot? I don't think very much, but if anything, it's probably a positive.
I don't know. We're going to have to talk about this the day after the general election in November, because this is what I'm thinking, is I imagine that what will happen, Gavin Newsom will antagonize the president, and the president will take the bait, and that will help promote John Cox in California, because people are in California, Republicans are getting the president's tweets, and I think that will motivate those voters to come because they're following the president's suggestion of come out and support John Cox.
Republicans are now the third biggest party in California.
I know.
People declined the state, what a fancy word for independent or non-affiliated. They're the second party now. In California, Republicans are just another minority group. There are so few of them out there. So if President Trump were to come to California, I'd be overjoyed. I hope he comes down to Chico and speaks at the downtown plaza. But I'm not looking for that to happen. The things that he said about California, like Franklin Graham, who is the son of Billy Graham, did a tour of California. He claimed he didn't know it was the last week before the presidential or the midterm party primary election yesterday, but he stopped in various places, including here, including Chico and including Redding, and it didn't make much of a splash. But I read a lengthy article in the New York Times, May 28th. If you can get out your high tech and look at that, it's wonderful stuff to read. And the things he said about California is that California is now one giant college town. And that he wants to come to California to turn it red. What Franklin Graham is here is to raise money.
Yes, exactly.
He wasn't here to win votes. He was here to raise money.
Right.
Trump could come here and raise money if he goes to certain locales, I suppose. But as far as helping Republican candidates, I would think not. Every one of them is going to – they're going to be at the hairdresser that day if he shows up to their town.
Really? Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, I don't think he would necessarily – help any of them win, but I do think it would help turn out the voters. But
it cuts both ways.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
And since in California there's relatively few conservative voters, sure, relatively more liberal voters, it cuts both ways. And it would cut harshly towards Mr. Trump showing up. He could come here and raise money in certain communities. That's certainly true. But on the stump, no. And he said dreadful things about the state. I've forgotten. Maybe you're such an astute follower of public matters. Maybe you remember what dreadful things he said about the state.
About California?
Yes.
I'm not drawing a blank.
Not quite as colorful as Franklin and Graham's line that we're just one big college town. I don't think it's quite that kooky, but pretty out there.
It is kooky, because I actually feel like I'm not sure why that's insulting.
So. But there are 40 million people in the state. Just how kooky can we be?
Anyway, Mike Hawkins, we only have a couple more minutes left, and I want to ask you, based on the primary elections yesterday and over the last few months,
talk about how each party may be preparing for the general election campaigns. And so, for example, messaging. There's one of the questions that keeps coming up. Should the Democrats talk about, if you give us the House back, we will start the impeachment process? And I'm not sure that's a particularly good strategy. What do you think the Democratic Party, the National Democratic Party is going to promote, and what do you think the Republican Party is going to promote?
All politics, as Tip O'Neill said, is local. If you're running in a congressional district, you don't say that elect me to Congress and we'll impeach the president. Now, that's for the fringies. The cuckoo world is interested in that. Real people are not interested in doing that. So you run on meat and potatoes issues. You run on that the president has not handled the economy, put us into debt. The tweets are embarrassing for a great country. He's created enemies around the world and people who used to be friends, Canada, Mexico, Japan. I think those kind of things, impeachment is a word people like to throw around, but in the whole history of the country, there have been two impeachments, and both were unsuccessful.
So the Democrats, I think, are going to talk about health care.
Clearly.
And talk about jobs.
Yes, everyone does.
Everyone does. It's sort of easy formula. What are the Republicans going to talk about? I know all politics are local, but there is always a national thread. They're part of the national party platform. What do you think they're going to do? Or you think they're all going to simply fend for the individual candidates will fend for themselves and simply say, not my president for this particular moment?
It depends on where they live. Some places they're going to try themselves closely to the president. Other places are going to dance away. The Dodge line is, when I can agree with the president, I'll support him. When I can't, I'll support you back here in this congressional district. Republicans will talk about the things that they traditionally talk about. Fear of the future. Fear of social change, protecting our borders, euphemism for what we all know what that means.
Right.
The wonderful unemployment rate, which, of course, this administration inherited a rising economy. They didn't create one. They're going to talk about how well that the stock market is doing. Never mind that most stocks belong to just relatively few people.
Right.
But their people want to hear that. I don't think you're going to hear much really distinctive unless there's something peculiar in a given district. Then they'll talk about that sort of thing.
Mike Hawkins, in the last minute or so that we have, I have an email from Karen who says, what does Mike think about districts for city council? And I know that in the city council meeting last night, they discussed this idea of dividing up the city into districts and having council members represent that district. What do you think about that, Mike Hawkins?
The city of Chico has 93,000 people. If you were to break it up into six ward districts, you would represent about 16,000 people. Now, the arguments for it are that you would make the elections less expensive and that you'd get to know your neighbors. I've lived in the same house since 1984, and I know some of my neighbors, but it's not based other than the ones that live like two stones throw away. I don't know them because they're my neighbors. I know people in my neighborhood because I know them in other ways. The argument then is the candidate can get to know the people. I would say, to start with, you got about a 40% chance of being represented by somebody who would not share your view. So you can't go to your alderman, we'll call it that, because that's a big city word for it, and say, well, I want you to do thus and such. And the alderman, usually it'll be a man if it's a Republican, and they'll look at you. They'll look at you and say, well, you know, I don't support that position, and I know you don't support me, so I'm not interested. If you have seven-member body, as the city council is now, you have somebody within the body that you can go to because they represent the entire city. The other argument for it, or among the arguments for it, is that the city would the elections would be less expensive. What would happen is that they would pick out which the political activists, some people like myself, would pick out which districts would not be competitive and leave them alone. And then they'd target the districts that would be competitive or perceived as such, and that's where the TV ads would go, and that's where the money would be spent. So if there's, say, six districts and they targeted two of them or three of them, that's where the activity would be. But as in our present situation, every 4 years you get to vote seven times. If we broke our community up into districts, every 4 years you get to vote once.
Oh, all right. We're going to have, I'm going to have to bring you back in the future and we'll talk more about it. That I disagreed with you. Oh, I mean, I like the idea of districts, and we could talk about this further. Yeah, you know, you know my position on this. But the only thing where I thought, all right, I'll give you that, is the fact that we only get to vote once every 4 years. So we'll have to pick it up the next time.
And my other concern about this is who draws the district lines?
Gosh. All right. We're going to have to continue this conversation. As always, it is a pleasure, Mike Hawkins, to talk politics with you.
Thank you, Sir Hildebrand.
Yeah.
Happy to be your guest, as always.
We'll do it again soon. All right. This brings us to the end of this edition of The Real Issue, which is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by BCAC.TV, Butte County's public access television station, broadcasting on Comcast Channel 11. Deborah Lucero and BCAC.TV provide award-winning, locally produced arts, information, and entertainment. They're located at 500 Main Street. And they include daily broadcasts of Democracy Now, weekdays at 5 and 11 p.m. For more information or to get involved, visit bcac.tv. Tune in next week. We will have a quick interview with Medea Benjamin before she gives, I think it's about an hour-long talk here at the studio. So until next time, peace out.
This land is your land, and this land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you and me. As I went a-walking that ribbon of highway, and I saw above me that endless skyway, I saw below me that golden valley. This land was made for you and me.